Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of Light Beer, Dark Money. I am your light beer expert, Chris Clements. And unfortunately, my co-host is gone again. He couldn't even call in from wherever he's at, which is, I guess it's out of the country or someplace. But we had a really great call last week, me calling in from Nashville, Tennessee. I was just about to go to the Ryman Auditorium where I saw this little band out of San Diego called Switchfoot. I had front row seats. It was absolutely unbelievable. They gave a great show. They are on tour. For those of you who are interested in bands like that, they're on tour basically replicating their seminal album, The Beautiful Letdown, which broke them mainstream with songs like Dare You to Move. And that song was a big, big part of my life. I would say like 10 years ago when I was going through really an interesting time. And I heard, you know, when you hear a song for the first time, it can really have an effect on you. I had heard that song a bunch of times, but the time I was at about 10 years ago when I heard that song, I took it literally, and it was time for me to move. And my life has been absolutely phenomenal for it, for that. But we're not here to talk about Switchfoot, because the entire Congress is quickly burning down. And I so wish Sean was here, because he did give me some thoughts about what's happening in Congress. And for anybody who's been living under a rock over the last couple of days, the Congress is just a complete and total mess. You have Matt Gaetz and company, including two of our own members of our own delegation, Andy Biggs and Eli Crane, voting to vacate the speakership along with 100% of the Democrats, leaving Kevin McCarthy without his job. He still has a job as a representative of Bakersfield, California, but he's out. And now what happens? Matt Gaetz said he was going to file the motion to vacate over the weekend when a continuing resolution to keep the government open, which is the right thing to do, was passed. And about 126 Republicans voted for that. And 96% of the conference voted to keep McCarthy as speaker, leaving eight members, including somebody named Nancy Mace, who inexplicably voted to do this. It makes absolutely no sense. I don't know what she gains from it. She said that Kevin had not paid attention enough to her women's issues. I don't know what her women's issues are. I do know that she showed up at a prayer breakfast some months ago, and she was late because she was, shall we say, with her boyfriend at her home, and showed up to a prayer breakfast, and that did not go over very well with the people who were praying there. But regardless of that, eight individuals have put the Congress into turmoil, primarily one being Matt Gaetz, and it was very interesting as Kevin McCarthy, you know, trotted out to give his final press conference, I guess, as speaker. He said some very pointed things about those members, specifically saying, quote, "They are not conservatives. They voted against one, the greatest cut in history that Congress has ever voted for, which collectively was about an 8% budget cut. But you take defense out of that, and it was about a 35% budget cut. And they voted against that. They voted against work requirements. They voted against NIPA reform. They voted against border security. They voted against guns. They don't get to say they're conservative because they're angry and they're chaotic." And this includes our friend Andy Biggs and his compatriot Eli Crane. And Eli, I just need to digress for just a second. He just seems to be kind of a puppet. there's really no... There's no original thought coming out of there, and he just seems to be getting led along by whoever, you know, is grabbing the camera. And this move by those eight individuals is all about grabbing the camera. For Matt Gaetz specifically, it's what I've been saying online. It's all about chicks, clicks, and coin, because we all know Matt Gaetz likes to date 17-year-olds, and that's not in dispute. In fact, McCarthy continued in his viewpoint of those who ousted him, quote, "You all know Matt Gaetz. You know it was personal. It had nothing to do about spending." Matt Gaetz got on the House floor and talked about the 12 appropriation bills that were not brought to the floor, principally because he and his compatriots didn't allow them to be brought to the floor. But McCarthy continued, "Everything he accused somebody of, he was doing. It was all about getting attention from you. I mean, we're getting email fundraisers from him as he's doing it. Quote, join in quickly." And to be told, I've gotten two or three text fundraising emails from Matt over the last 24 hours, to which I did not respond kindly. McCarthy continues, "That's not governing. That's not becoming a member of Congress. And regardless of what you think, I've seen the text. It's all about ethics, his ethics, but that's all right." McCarthy continued about Matt Gaetz's ethics, which we've talked about on the show a couple different times. "It was all about his ethics, which was a reference to the House Ethics Committee investigation into Gaetz over allegations that Gaetz, quote, may have engaged in sexual misconduct or illicit drug use, shared inappropriate images or videos on the House floor." So for those who might not know what that means, he was sharing pornographic images with other members on the House floor, "misused state identification records, converted campaign funds to personal use." So this whole exercise is really about Matt raising money because people think that he's going to run for governor. Who knows? At this point, I can't see him running for governor, but he's raising a bunch of money. And he may have accepted a bribe or improper gratuity or an impermissible gift, according to the report by the committee. That's unbelievable. And that hasn't been reported nearly enough. There are lesser people who've come under ethics investigation. And Matt Gaetz is probably the bottom of the barrel in this regard. And for him to throw, and I said this on the podcast about a week ago, I think as of a year ago, he was under FBI investigation for, he was dating a 17-year-old woman. There was a concern that he was actually sex trafficking her across state lines. A buddy of his got convicted for much of that, including bribery. And the FBI inexplicably dropped the case. And they dropped the case because that 17-year-old turned 18 and then would not cooperate with the FBI. And her attorneys would not cooperate with the FBI. So it's just unbelievable that this clown is throwing a great institution like the House of Representatives in disarray. However, you know, McCarthy, by agreeing to the motion to vacate, knew this must have been coming because Gaetz was gunning for him. Andy Biggs, our congressman here, was gunning for him. A lot of this, obviously, is personal. On the whole, I think I had my issues with Kevin McCarthy. And on the whole, I think he did a pretty decent job. He opened up an impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. His lieutenants, who are now running for Speaker, Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise, and others, have done a phenomenal job of highlighting the Biden crime family, of highlighting the issues at the border, of highlighting the issues of crime in our communities. And I'm not quite sure with a four-person majority, you're going to do much better. And there's always what you want to do in Congress and what you can do in Congress. And these people seem to forget that, you know, last time I checked, Mitch McConnell is not the majority leader in the Senate. It's Chuck Schumer. And last time I checked, Donald Trump lost the election. So regardless if you think about whether there was improprieties or anything else, Joe Biden is the president of the United States, and you have to respect that. He controls the administration. He can veto the budget. So there's what you can do and then what you can't do. And this basically gives a lot of power to the Democrats on the budget process. You're going to have moderate Republicans who are in swing districts partnering with Democrats to try to get things done. At the same time, with every single Democrat voting to oust Kevin McCarthy and laughing all the way because the catcalls the other day against Matt Gaetz in the House of Congress were just hilarious. People were literally laughing at him, which is embarrassing for him. And he's been lashing out ever since. But you know, be careful what you wish for, because if you get a Steve Scalise and you get certainly if you get a Jim Jordan, you're not going to get aid to Ukraine. You're not going to get a lot of things that you like. And many of your members are probably going to get kicked off committees. You already had the first shot fired the other day because of every Democrat running, you know, voting against Kevin McCarthy. Nancy Pelosi, which was unknown to, I think, a lot of people, had a quiet little office in the House of Representatives. And so did Steny Hoyer of Maryland. They've since been removed from those offices immediately following that vote. And the Speaker pro tem ordered them to get their stuff out and threw them to the curb. I think that's absolutely fair. I think it's absolutely, you know, some people are saying, oh, it's just petty. We shouldn't be doing that. Well, you know, the simple fact is, if every single Republican, if there was a motion to vacate the speakership under Nancy Pelosi's reign, and every single Republican would have voted for that, the chips would have fallen where they may as well. And so what happens next? Well, nobody knows what really happens next. The House is in recess. We've asked several of our congressmen here to come on Light Beer, Dark Money, including Andy Biggs. Birds chirping. Nobody wants to talk about this. They're under a tremendous amount of fire from the conference. I think Matt Gaetz probably should be removed from the conference. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich called on that the other day in an op-ed in the Washington Post. And I can't imagine they don't do that at some point. Matt's saying that, oh, I'll support Jim Jordan. He would be great. Oh, I'll support Steve Scalise. Well, woe be it to them if they agree to run with a motion to vacate. That has to be eliminated almost immediately. I wouldn't want the job. Of course, this job is the most thankless job in the world. You have a 4-seat majority. You have a slim margin of error. It's like hurting the Republican Party and the Republican conference, that's what I mean to say, it's like herding cats, because they are a bunch of individuals. They don't work as a team, versus the Democrats, which will cut, you know, the speaker and the leadership will cut off your knees if you break ranks. And they operate more as just a homogeneous group to get things done. And they believe that incrementalism is fine as long as you're winning. The Republicans would rather just burn down the entire House. The other person, interestingly enough, that this helps is probably Mitch McConnell. It gives him a lot of leverage to get what he needs done in the Senate and to force whatever budget items he wants in the House. One thing that isn't happening in the Senate anytime soon is aid to Ukraine. And Sean and I kind of differ on this, and we mentioned it last week during the podcast. My view on Ukraine is it's been 18 months. We haven't seen a lot of progress. There's a lot of corruption, and there needs to be an off-ramp. And the administration and the military-industrial complex that is supporting the effort in Ukraine hasn't given us one. And with reports of fraud and reports of a lot of our money going to first responders in Kyiv and educational initiatives in Kyiv, that might be fine after the war is won, but not during the war. So that's a big problem. And until we see that off-ramp, I think you're going to have a lot of conservatives, including Jim Jordan on the House, if he were to become the Speaker, and including Rand Paul and others in the Senate, not before any sort of budget items that have that part of the document. So it's... And also, you have 19 senators, that was reported yesterday, who basically want to restore regular order to the Senate floor in the 44 days they have left to produce a budget, and are demanding Chuckie Schumer bring the 12 appropriations bills, which have been passed out of committee, to the floor for debate and for amendments. And we'll see if that happens. That would be the first time. There's only been four times. I was amazed when I, Robin, I was amazed when I heard this today, or I read this today. Only four times since 1977 has regular order been achieved in that, in both the Senate and the House, where they've passed their 12 appropriations bills, gone to conference on those bills, and sent them to the president. Only four times. That's unbelievable. How does that work? So at some point, we've got to stop the insanity and bring that body together for the purposes of representing the American people. And right now, it's chaos. And it's going to be a long month. Like I said, the Congress is in recess. All the Congress people have gone home. Who knows what they're doing? They're not coming on Light Beer Dark Money because they want to avoid us. They don't want to talk to us. They don't want the real questions asked. You know, Andy Biggs doesn't want me asking him, you know, why are you partnering up with Matt Gaetz, who's a total complete slimeball? Why? No, he doesn't want that question. Eli Crane would never come on because he's not having any original thoughts. So that's unfortunate, but that's the case what we find ourselves today. So it's going to be a long month. Look for several votes. Look for other people throwing their hats in the ring as they see the jockeying continue. I asked somebody last night, who do you think has the inline track? And he felt that Steve Scalise had it. Unfortunately, what a lot of people do know, that Representative Scalise has been, unfortunately, dealing and recovering from chemotherapy, dealing with blood cancer. And so there's a lot of issues and a lot of concerns about his health, and we wish him well. Also, Steve Scalise was one of the people shot at that Republican softball game several years ago by a mad Bernie Sanders supporter, along with several other members of Congress. And he's an amazing guy, really nice guy. Both of them are very, very well accomplished. There will be others who enter the race if they see weakness or if they don't see anyone consolidating around either one of them. But again, Democrats, be careful what you wish for. If you do get one of them, they're going to be less inclined to work with you. They're going to slam a lot of things down your throat. A lot of your you know, a lot of members will be removed from committees, and there'll be a lot of change pretty quickly. But grab the popcorn over the next month or so, because there was one report I saw in the Daily Wire earlier today that they had to adjourn quickly because half the conference would have gone to fisticuffs. There would have been fights. There would have been bloodshed on the House floor, which that's where we find the Republican Party today. Faction, you know, driven by factions, directionless. It is not the Reagan revolutionary coalition that was built all those years ago. Trump, even in this era, wasn't able to save Kevin McCarthy, which is very interesting. He called on everyone to lay down their arms and apparently called Matt Gaetz, and nope, they were going to move forward with this sort of vindictive, destructive motion to vacate. And they got all the Democrats to sign on, which is one of the most amazing things. And there will be repercussions of that for both the country and for the Republican Party. Yeah, here it is in the Daily Wire. GOP rep says Republicans need a recess after Speaker ouster. You would have seen fists thrown. Article by Tim Pierce. So there we go. Meanwhile, in our fair state, someone named Carrie Lake, you might have heard of her, has decided to run for Senate. She has filed her paperwork this last week in Washington, D.C., and took on several meetings. And she's going to try to take on Kyrsten Sinema, who still hasn't declared whether she is actually running or not. She is raising money. And Ruben Gallego for the blessing of representing the great state of Arizona. Blake Masters has not entered the race. Apparently, Donald Trump called Blake and told him not to, that Kerry was you know, the one to support. And I don't know Carrie Lake. I know a lot of people around here who do. A lot of people love Carrie Lake. She certainly has been a force in the party here in the state of Arizona. So I don't want to, you know, besmudge her character. She's still trying to fight this idea that the election was stolen here in the state of Arizona. She's gotten several hearings. Some have gone her way, some haven't. But I think the biggest issue for Carrie Lake is not necessarily the Republican base or getting the Republican nomination for Senate. I think once she declares, I think October 11th next week, is she's going to have this big announcement in Scottsdale. Once she declares, I think she has a clear shot at it. Sheriff Lamb from Casa Grande, who really has done more fundraising than law enforcement over the last several years, doesn't really have much of a shot. I don't think anybody else will either. The issue for Carrie comes when she has the nomination and what she does thereafter. Because if it is a three-person race with Kirsten, Carrie, and Ruben, where do you go then? One criticism I've had of Carrie in the last election, she was leading pretty handily in the September polling. And then she decided to tact hard right and did some inexplicable rallies and fundraisers with members of the hard right. And I don't need to identify them for our purposes here. And that was a mistake. You do that in the primary. You shore up your base. You won the primary. I mean, now you can't be attacking McCain Republicans in the general. You can't. You can't be attacking the business community as puppets of Doug Ducey in the turning the general. You can't. You've got to, and you can't be attacking conservative groups in the general. You've got to shore up those people ahead of time. My advice to Carrie Lake, if she were asking me, which I don't think that she will, but if she were, I would be telling her to go hat in hand to the Arizona Chamber and to all the chambers here in the state of Arizona. I would go hat in hand to leading conservative activist groups like Center for Arizona Policy, the Goldwater Institute, Arizona Free Enterprise Club, and speak with their members as to why you should be elected and get them working for you. I'd go to the Koch brothers. I would go to Washington, D.C. and meet with Heritage Action and Conservative Partnership Institute and all the activist groups there as to why you should be the next senator of Arizona. But I would shore up, most importantly, suburban moms in the business community. Suburban moms in this last election did not go for the Trump candidates. And they didn't go for Donald Trump in 2020. And that is probably your biggest obstacle and your biggest opportunity. And how are you going to achieve that? And how you can achieve that is through a tremendous amount of humility and understanding that they have their concerns and how do you win them over? Because those groups, the business community and specifically suburban moms, will vote for Kyrsten Sinema. Kyrsten has done a tremendous job. I give her all the credit in the world of shoring up her support with small businesses and all the reputable chambers in the state. She's done a great job of cultivating those relationships to where she's liked, she's likable, and she understands their issues. She's not for more regulation. She's not for more taxation. She's basically has tried to tack out her, you know, her economic viewpoints as fairly moderate to conservative. And that's a smart move for her. On social issues, if you were to do a deep dive on Kyrsten, she would find she's as left as they come. But people many times, you know, don't vote on those issues unless they are top of mind. And we're going to have a ballot initiative on the supposed right to an abortion here in the state. And that could, you know, and so social issues will be on the ballot this time. But she has tremendous cachet and support with those communities. And so for Carrie Lake, it's how do you shore up your base and tack enough to the middle in those areas to get people motivated, to get people want to vote for you, to get you, you know, over at least 40%. Because if it's a third, it's going to get nasty. And there's going to be a lot of money spent on this race. Arizona, is going to be the battleground of 2024 nationwide. So at the end of the day, money's not going to be the issue. It's going to be about messaging. It's going to be about your grassroots support. It's going to be about peeling off those folks who either didn't vote for you, didn't vote at all, or weren't motivated by your candidacy for governor. So how do you do that? Now, that's entirely up to you. I think you need to be humble and be approachable and be understanding and have the ability to listen to those groups. And don't say that the Republican Party is no longer the party of McCain, because you need those voters. Those voters will talk to you if you're sincere. McCain, you know, won statewide races for several election cycles, and there was a reason he did that. You wouldn't see John McCain very often before an election cycle. That is true. He was a national figure. He was doing national things. But once an election cycle rolled around, he did precisely that. He went to the chambers. He went to the different party groups, and he asked for their support. And he brought home some bacon also with the military and our bases here, and was very proactive on the border. So he did what he had to do to get elected and shore up both. And he got elected by both conservative Republicans and conservative Democrats. And that was a big part of his coalition. So how do you do that? If you wrap yourself in Donald Trump, you're going to lose in the election in Arizona. He's not popular here. And so how do you move away from that? And that remains to be seen. And now, again, since Sean isn't here, my sort of third dark beer rant. Hey, kudos to the Arizona Diamondbacks. You get to go play the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium this Saturday. Diamondbacks had a great year, amazing year. Dodgers have had an incredible year. Sean and I are both diehard, long, you know, probably born Dodger fans in some way, shape, or form. So we're really happy that our two favorite teams are playing and wish them all the best. You have a great weekend of college football coming up. ASU's playing Colorado. I have no predictions in that game. That could go any way. I think ASU is better than they're playing. I thought they played USC very, very well. They played Cal really well. They just couldn't pull it out. And there's a lot of pieces still missing with ASU. Colorado is a lot of hype, but Shedeur Sanders is the real deal. I mean, he put on a show the second half of that USC-Colorado game and exploited the USC defense in ways that have become pretty typical in the second half of any USC game. Poor tackling, poor assignments, kind of just poor everything. And then USC has Arizona this weekend at the Coliseum. It's a game of redemption for them because they feel they did play so poorly. But Arizona took Washington last week to the mat. And their quarterback, Penix, for Washington didn't have a touchdown. It could be a really interesting game if USC's defense plays like they did at the second half of Colorado. The first half, they played pretty well. The second half, they decided to stop tackling and missing assignments. And the quarterback of Arizona could make you pay for that. And there's a lot of enmeshment between Arizona and USC right now. A lot of different players who played together in high school. Transfer portal has been pretty generous, you know, with both schools. You have some folks who've gone over to Arizona from USC and vice versa. So it could be a really interesting game. At the end of the day, it's going to be the Caleb Williams show like it was over the weekend. But it could be very interesting. And then the big game of the weekend is Texas-Oklahoma. And I have no prediction in that game. I think Oklahoma is better than advertised, and I think they're going to give Texas some fits, and they might win that game and knock Texas off. Two undefeated teams going at it for this weekend. So that's my dark beer rant today. I'm missing Sean. I hope he's safe wherever he's at. I'm just going to end with what I asked in my last solo rant several weeks ago, and let's pray for our country. We still have the greatest country in the world. The fact that, I mean, the light at the end of the tunnel was something like happened at the House of Representatives the other day. That can happen in our country. It's unprecedented, replacing a speaker, voting out a speaker in that matter. But the fact that we can do that, we can have those arguments, that we can have those debates and act upon those debates is a unique piece of our republic. And those pieces can be celebrated. Free speech, free debate, free discourse. They can get nasty. Certainly, it could have gotten nasty with fisticuffs the other day. There are worse things that have happened in the House of Representatives going back into the 1700s and 1800s than a couple, you know, congressmen fighting. Worse things. But the fact that we're able to do this in our republic is a good thing. The fact we can have a speaker election over the next several months is a good thing. The fact that we can have these debates are wonderful things about our country. And the fact that we still have free elections and that I am sitting behind a microphone saying whatever I want to say to whomever wants to listen is one of the beautiful things of our country. And I am a libertarian when it comes to free speech, a massive advocate of I might not like what you say, but I will defend your right to say it. And I feel that way with people who on the left or people who are Marxists, people who are on the right and the far right with fascism. I think the more debate we have, the more open communication we have, our ideas as conservatives are better than their ideas. And the reason why you see the left inexplicably these days trying to squash free speech is because they know that. All they have is government, whereas we have the power of our ideas. And that was something espoused by Ronald Reagan, and I've always believed that ever since I was a young man, that our ideas trump, for lack of a better word, their ideas. And our ideas and practice of faith, freedom, free enterprise trump their ideas. And as long as I have this microphone, I'm going to keep talking about those ideas. Because we are a podcast of faith, freedom, free enterprise. And those are the founding principles of our great country. And thanks for listening, and God bless.